Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Looking for something scary, morbid, frighteningly insane.
Get out!
Every form of horror, from ghosts, cryptids, and curses, to deals with the devil, giant insects, and more. Join us at Haunted Tales, our weekly horror anthology series. And let me tell you a story.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. How are you today, Mom?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What story do you have for us today?
Well, I have a twofer. I have a story that is both brutal and bizarre, but I'm going to put it in the bizarre category because nobody died. But it's about a con man who convinced a bunch of people that he was an MI5 agent.
Oh,
special
interesting.
Agent. Yeah. How about you? What have you got for us today?
I'm going to be talking about Stanley Tookie Williams, the founder of the Crips.
Oh. That would be brutal, yeah.
Yeah, and to go with it, I have the Blue Lagoon cocktail, and we're not sure if we've done this already. I don't know if you checked yet, Mom, but we may have
done this. I did look it up.
Already.
We have not, but we have done a lot of blue drinks, so it might be very similar to half of the other blue drinks that we've done.
This one sounds pretty good. It's 1 ounce vodka, 1 ounce blue curacao, 4 ounces of lemonade, and garnish with a lemon wheel and a maraschino cherry. Let's give it a try. Sounds pretty tasty.
I don't think it's going to be very boozy. I think it's going to just taste like lemonade.
Yeah, probably. That's pretty good.
I don't taste any alcohol in it. Just tastes like sweet lemonade.
Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very blue, just like the Crips. That's why I picked the cocktail.
It is super blue. Makes sense.
Yes. Okay, let's get into Stanley Tookie Williams. So Stanley Tookie Williams was born on December 29th, 1953 in Shreveport, Louisiana. He was usually called by his middle name Tookie. When Tookie was curious, one,
his... how do you spell Tookie?
T-O-O-K-I-E. Like cookie? Like cookie with a T.
Okay, so cookie with a T. Okay.
Yeah. When he was one, his father left his life, and so he and his mother, Louisiana Williams, which is an interesting name, living in Louisiana, having your name be Louisiana.
That is, yes.
So
that is an interesting
They both picked up everything and moved to South Central Los Angeles. As a kid, he would make money by betting on just about anything with the older kids. This included anything from who could spit the farthest to organized street fights and dog fighting. He would often get paid to take care of the dogs after the fight.
No, don't dog fight.
Yeah, that's bad.
I don't like
he gained a reputation as a great fighter and often won most of the organized street fights he was paid to be a part of. Tookie was expelled from his high school and denied access into other schools in the area due to his fighting. In the 60s, a lot of gangs in Los Angeles were dissolving to join the Black Panther movement, which led to new, more violent gangs being formed. So, great. Tookie joined a gang at 15 and gained their respect after beating up the founder after he made a joke about his mother. In 1969, Tookie was arrested for car theft and was sent to juvenile detention. While in juvie, he picked up an interest in bodybuilding, and when he got out of juvie at 17, he was significantly larger than he was when he went in. This helped in his intimidation for fighting.
Makes sense.
Shortly after being released from juvie, he met Raymond Washington, who heard about Tookie's willingness to fight people who were older and bigger than him. Raymond was a gangster in the area, and the two had an idea. They wanted to dissolve the smaller regional gangs of Los Angeles and create a larger gang that essentially involved the whole city. This gang was called the Crips. There was originally three Crip sets, or groups, you could call it, but the East Side Crips ran by Raymond, the West Side Crips ran by Tookie, and the Compton Crips ran by their friend Mac Thomas. The three went on a recruiting campaign where they would challenge the leaders of other gangs, which resulted in many of the smaller independent gangs joining the Crips. At this time, most gangs would respect their territory, but Tookie would engage in acts of random violence against rival gangs and civilians. The gangs that didn't join the Crips formed their own gang called the Bloods, and a rivalry was started. Raymond and Mac were both murdered from gun violence, leaving Tookie as the sole founder and head of the Crips.
Okay.
During the day, Tookie worked as an anti-gang youth counselor, and at night he was the leader of a Crips gang, which is interesting.
That, all right. So was he using it to find new prospects for his gang? By going in and going, hey, you shouldn't be in gangs. And then the people that were like, I don't know about that. He recruits them.
I'm not sure. I didn't see anything about that, but it would make sense.
Yeah.
In 1976, Tookie was shot in a drive-by shooting committed by the Bloods. He was taking his dog for a walk when the car pulled up and started shooting. Tookie dove onto the ground, but was shot in both of his legs. Doctors told him he would never walk again, but after a year of rehab, he regained his ability to walk. This whole incident ultimately resulted in him abusing PCP. Because he was being the leader of a gang, he just got shot, his grandmother passed away. It was just, he was having a tough year.
Right. And they didn't have Oxy back then.
Yeah, true. He lost his counseling job and the PCP was causing him serious mental health issues, so he took a brief stay at a psychiatric ward. On February 28, 1979, Tukey and three other gang members approached a 7-Eleven with a shotgun, two pistols, and a rifle, with the plan of robbing the store. 26-year-old Albert Owens was sweeping the parking lot and walked inside of the store to help Tukey and his friends cash out, like, at the cash register. Mm-hmm. Tukey was behind Albert and pulled the shotgun from under his jacket, pointing it at Albert, telling him to shut up and keep walking. Tukey took Albert to the back storage room and forced him to lie on his stomach. He then shot the video camera equipment and then shot Albert twice in the back. The men then proceeded to rob the convenience store. Several months later, Tukey entered the Brookhaven Motel, which was run by 76-year-old Yen Yi Yang and his family. Tukey walked right over to the private office area of the motel armed with a shotgun. He kicked down the door to the office where he found Yen, his wife, Sai Shai, and his daughter, Yu Chin. He shot and killed all three of them at point-blank range and then proceeded to empty out the cash register and leave.
That's not
Tukey
nice.
Was arrested and convicted of all four murders. Yeah, no, not nice at all. So he was arrested and convicted of all four murders and was sentenced to death in 1981. While in prison, he denounced his gang, created a children's book warning kids about gang violence, and was even nominated multiple times for the Nobel Peace Prize.
What?
Yeah.
Back up. What were his nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize for? Because he said, oh, you shouldn't join a gang? Or because he wrote a children's book?
Advocating for younger people not to join gangs, I believe. Like, I don't know. He was nominated, but I don't think he ever won any of them. In 2005, multiple courts decided against a retrial, and the governor at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, denied clemency for Tukey. On December 13, 2005, he was executed by lethal injection at the San Quentin State Prison.
Whoa! I did not know that.
Interesting story.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that ending. I thought he would still be sitting in there. Well, because, I mean, California hasn't.
I think he
a
was
lot
like
of states
the
haven't.
12th person to get killed on death row in California in like a super long time. Like, they don't really kill. You could be on death row, but still not get executed. Like, a lot of people just sit
there. And now they've gotten rid of it altogether and everybody's just a life sentence, basically. But I didn't. And I mean, if it were 1970s, I wouldn't be surprised if they had executed him. But in the after 2000.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, what'd you say, 2004?
2005.
That's still like, wow. That's not that long ago. So, okay, 20 years, but come on.
Yeah.
Anything after 2000, I feel like was 5 years ago.
No, it's time is flying.
It does. Wow. Okay. I honestly was not expecting that. I did not know that information. Wild.
Yeah, it's a wild story. Let's
For
hear
sure.
about your con man.
Okay, my con man. Yes, this is Robert Freegard. He was born in 1971 in Dronefield, Derbyshire, England. And the fact that it's spelled Derbyshire, I'm betting that I'm mispronouncing that. So any of our English or British listeners, if I mispronounced it, then sorry. It's probably Derbyshire or something. I don't know. Either way, probably. It's not that relevant. He was born in England. There you go. On the surface, he didn't look like much. He wasn't terribly charismatic. He wasn't particularly handsome. He was just kind of an average guy. Nothing exciting about him. He did have a potential superpower, though. He was really good at manipulation. In his early adult years, he worked a few odd jobs. He was a barman working in a bar. He was also a car salesman. But most notably, he was a bartender at a pub near a college campus in Shropshire. This was when he started crafting the story that would make him infamous. The story was that he was an undercover agent working for MI5. Yes.
Okay.
That MI5, the British Secret Service.
Interesting.
Two young, idealistic students in the early 90s, this undercover story was probably very appealing, even if to us now it sounds completely ridiculous. I mean, we've done a few stories where people were conned by somebody pretending to be Secret Service, and maybe it's the current status, but if somebody came up to me and told me they worked for the CIA or the British Secret Service, or if they were a spy of any kind, I'd be like, you're a liar. Just in general. But people did believe it. It started in 1992 with two students from a nearby college. That was John Atkinson and Sarah Smith. Here's where the bizarre part kind of starts to kick in. He told John and Sarah that he was an MI5 agent and that they were in danger because of supposed IRA threats. Back in the early 90s, IRA-related fears were very real in the UK. There were bombings and all sorts of stuff. So if you threw out the words IRA, people were scared. He convinced them that the only way to stay safe was to go into hiding and follow his instructions completely. This wasn't just a one-night prank. It turned into years of psychological manipulation. Freeguard created an entire alternate reality for them. He made them believe they were being watched and that their families were at risk. He convinced them that if they didn't follow orders, there would be terrible consequences. They had to cut ties with loved ones, leave their homes, and even endure so-called loyalty tests. One such test included Sarah sleeping on the streets to prove her dedication. I don't know what this guy, it's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
If he's, I need to know how dedicated you are to this cause, so I want you to sleep on a park bench in a park. That's weird. Regardless.
Not usual behavior.
No, regardless, they did it. Over time, Freeguard expanded the circle of control. He started using Sarah as bait to recruit others, pretending that she was also an agent, when in fact, she was just another victim. Although she didn't know she was a victim, she just thought, she fully bought in. Even though it now all sounds insane, Freeguard had a way of finding people who were vulnerable or idealistic, and he spun stories that tapped into their fears and dreams. But he didn't stop at mind games. He drained his victims financially, too. He told them that they needed to pay for safe houses, to buy fake IDs, and that they had to pay for training exercises, all under the guise of being on the run from these deadly threats against them. At one point, he convinced Sarah's parents to give him over £10,000 to help their daughter, whom they believed was in grave danger. So he's spinning his tails for the parents, too, and they're forking over cash to protect their kid.
Not strange.
He wasn't. It's very strange. Again, if somebody, if you called me and said, hey, I want you to talk to my friend, Bob. I'm in trouble and he's going to help me. And Bob was like, seriously, Declan's in so much trouble and somebody's trying to kill him. I need you to give me money so I can be, so I can help him. I'd be like, bullshit.
Yeah,
bullshit. I'm very skeptical of anything and everything, though. So yeah, I don't think shit. I would be a very good mark.
Yeah.
He was actively involved in his victims' lives, manipulating everyone, including the parents. He even forced one victim to work in menial jobs while sending him their wages. Again, all part of his quote-unquote training. So he's like, go sweep floors, but send me all your money, and this will show that you're being a good spy in training. It's just
almost like a cult.
Cuckoo for cocoa.
Like, that's what it sounds like.
Yes, exactly. The manipulation reminds me of a cult. And I mean, we've done so many stories of cult type things. The only difference I would say with this one is that his victims weren't necessarily, they didn't necessarily know each other. You know, like the two, John and Sarah, they knew each other, I think. But, you know, it was like these little pods of victims, not like a group together. He kept victims moving from town to town, living in cars or cheap motels, always watching, always issuing orders, and always demanding more money from them. The con wasn't just about the cash. It was about complete control of the people and their lives. One of his tactics was cutting off people from their families and their previous lives. He convinced multiple victims that their parents were part of a terrorist plot or could not be trusted. So I'm telling you now, Declan, I'm not part of a terrorist plot. And you can trust me. Just so you know, I'm putting it on the record.
That's what a terrorist would say.
That's a good point. Shit. All right. We're going to have to have a loyalty test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Some families even believe their children were dead. One of his victims became the mother of his children. Her name was Maria Hendy, and they had two children while she was under his control. She was isolated from the outside world for nearly a decade. She worked long hours at low-paying jobs, and Freeguard would take the money for quote-unquote protection.
Yeah, sure.
She couldn't even use her real name or visit family. He used fear, isolation, and lies to control his victims, and people believed him. Not just for days or weeks, but for years. Which is boggling to my mind. He wasn't content with just one or two victims either. Over the years, he created a whole network of lies, and his manipulation only became more refined with each new target. So he's like getting better at his con. Once he had a grip on a person, he isolated them from their friends and family, took control over their movements, and drained their bank accounts. But this wasn't just a financial con. Like I said, it was the psychological dominance. One victim, Elizabeth Bartholomew, was a legal secretary when she met Freeguard. He went in with the secret agent story, and she told her that he needed help with a secret operation. Which... okay, side note. Have you seen the movie with Jamie Lee Curtis and Arnold Schwarzenegger? I think it's called True Lies, where he's an actual spy. I think we've watched it together. He's a spy and she's just a common housewife. And then she meets a guy in a bar. I think it was Bill Pullman was the actor. And he tells her that he is a spy. Anyway, it reminded me of this where he like comes on to this woman. The Bull Pullman, he is not a spy. He's just some weirdo who's trying to con women into sleeping with him and stuff. And he figures that like the secret agent spy thing is a cool tactic. But it totally reminded me of that. So he tells it 100%. Yeah. So Elizabeth ends up handing over thousands of pounds and went completely off the grid, abandoning her old life. Then there was Carolyn Cowper, a lawyer from London. Freegard dated her while simultaneously dating and controlling other women. He convinced Caroline to take out a loan for a new car, which he promptly took and never returned. Not the car, but the money. So, no car ever showed up. She later found herself 14,000 pounds in debt. By this point, Freegard wasn't just a scammer. He was a full-blown cult-like figure, like you mentioned. Operating without a group compound, just using fear and life as his weapons. So how does a bartender turned fake spy finally get caught? You might be wondering. With the victim, Kimberly Adams. She was an American child psychologist. She met Freegard in 2002 through a dating site. Freegard was charming, attentive, and swept Kimberly off her feet. But things took a strange turn when he said he worked for British intelligence and was constantly on secret missions. He claimed he needed to go off the grid, and he dragged Kimberly into his make-believe story. She left her home in the U.S. and moved to the U.K. to be with him. Eventually, he persuaded her to quit her job and sell her house. She gave him everything she had, which was about $100,000, which in the early 2000s is a fair amount of money. I mean, it's a fair amount of money now, yeah. But Kimberly's friends and family did not believe this bullshit story. And they were suspicious from the beginning. When they realized she was planning to marry this mysterious British man, they called law enforcement. The FBI was alerted and they started digging into the story. Soon they were working alongside Scotland Yard and the UK's Serious Organized Crime Agency. They tracked Kimberly to a hotel where she was essentially being held under Freegard's control. Not like physically, but, you know, with all the psychological bullshit that he pulled. She was trapped in the psychological crap. So they managed to intervene before she could marry him, which is good. And she didn't disappear. Freegard was finally arrested at Heathrow Airport in a sting operation set up by law enforcement. It turned out he had multiple aliases, dozens of victims, and had conned people out of nearly £1 million in total.
Jesus Christ.
Which, yeah, he got some money from people. Yeah. He was charged with 10 counts of theft, 8 counts of obtaining money by deception, 2 counts of kidnapping, because he had forced people to live under false identities in fear for their lives. He didn't physically kidnap anyone. He just scared the living shit out of them, basically. In 2005, he was convicted and sentenced to life in prison, but it didn't last long. In 2007, he appealed his kidnapping convictions. His lawyers argued that the victims had gone willingly with him, even if they were lied to and misled through the whole thing, they went with him voluntarily. So they were like, that doesn't really count as kidnapping. So the courts agreed and the kidnapping charges were overturned. So his life sentence was reduced to 9 years because of the theft stuff. He walked out of prison in 2009, having served just under 5 years. but I'm not done with the story. You might think I'm done, but I'm not done.
No.
Freeguard didn't go into hiding. He didn't lay low. In 2011, he had a new alias and a new girlfriend, Sandra Clifton. She was a successful woman from the UK with two teenage children. Once again, he wormed his way into the situation. He charmed Sandra and convinced her to cut off ties with her family. Her kids were confused and worried. They said their mom started acting like a different person. They couldn't understand what was going on. She was now distant, controlled, and cold to them. Freeguard moved into her home, took over her finances, and even started using her email and name to conduct business. Her ex-husband and children tried everything they could to reach her, but she was completely under Freeguard's influence. In 2022, Netflix released a documentary called The Puppet Master, Hunting the Ultimate Con Man. It detailed Freeguard's history and crimes. In 2022, he was wanted in France after injuring two police officers with his car while trying to flee a confrontation. So he like ran into some cops with his car and they were like, that's not cool. So they put out a warrant for him. After he was briefly on the run, he was arrested in Belgium. Earlier this year, 2025, he was convicted of violence against public officials with aggravating circumstances and was sentenced to 6 years in prison in February of this year. So
trying to run people, hopefully, run a cop over? He only got 6 years?
I don't know how much physical damage occurred to the police officers, but he did hit them with his car. And so he only got 6 years.
So like that could be like attempted murder.
Attempted murder? For real. Maybe he like bumped them with the bumper or something and they were like, oh my gosh, I have a bruise now. I don't know. I didn't look into like the severity of those damages or anything like that. But as of right now, he's back in prison. So we'll see.
That's good.
Crazy. Yeah,
it's a weird story. Another weird story.
It is. It's like, it's very cult-like in the stuff that he's getting people to buy into. And how he's controlling them. And they're just like, here's all my money and I'll do whatever you tell me. But yeah, it's got the secret agent spin, which is weird.
Yeah.
So... do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. My chaser is that Last of Us Season 2 is back. Last of Us is back with Season 2, I should say.
Any of it?
Yeah, I've watched the first 3 episodes. It's pretty good. I don't want to give any spoilers, but it's good.
Now, we're waiting, of course, because we have to binge it all at once.
What is your chaser?
My chaser is kind of a regional chaser, but anybody could go here. It's the Surprise Valley Hot Springs in Cedarville, California. Your dad and I went there recently and spent a weekend. And for those who don't know, Cedarville, California. I had never been there before. It is a very small, tiny little town with not a lot of services and nothing super exciting. I mean, there was like a restaurant and a coffee shop, and I heard that there was a bar, and there's like some cute little like antique shops and stuff like that. But it's not like a big town. It's very small. I think the sign said there were the population was like 512 people or something like that. So it's tiny. And the Hot Springs Hotel Resort, whatever you want to call it, is like 5 miles outside of Cedarville. But all of the rooms have their own private hot tub that is fed by the hot springs. So it's like mineral-based water, and it's clean and nice. And I've been near other kinds of hot springs that were like basically a mud pit, and a lot of people go and sit, and it's very hippie like and just makes me feel very uncomfortable. I don't want to sit in hot, muddy water with naked strangers. That's just not my jam. I'm not going to do that. So when people are like, oh, we went to the hot springs, I'm usually like, I'm glad that you had a good time. It's not for me. But this is not mud pits. These are actual like hot tubs, in-ground, cemented, hot tubby kind of stuff. It just has the hot spring water that's filling it. And we were, because it's not chemically treated, we were in that thing like 3-4 times a day and didn't have any problems with my skin, which I would normally, like, if I went into like a hot tub at a hotel or even our own hot tub, the chemicals and stuff, I can't do it several times a day without having to take a shower immediately afterwards because my skin's irritated. So anyway, if anybody wants to go to something like that, I recommend it. The hotel is nothing fancy, but you know, you're not really there for fancy. It was nice. Yeah. It was nice.
Well, I think that wraps up today's episode. Thanks for listening, everybody.
It does. Thanks, friends, for hanging out with us.
Yeah. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.